Hello and welcome from a wintertime San Francisco. This is Wizards of the Cast, episode 116. In a room filled with planeswalkers, we've got Evan Wardell.
Hello, guys.
Can't find a spot for your drink.
I've got so many liquids that I'm juggling.
We've got Larry Chatfield.
Howdy.
And we got myself, Cole Ferriello, and it's that time of year where collectively as a society we say, fuck it, let's all get shit-faced. That was my week. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah. That's been like the past 2 weeks. I got my Christmas bonus, went to Trader Joe's, and I was like, I haven't had some nice scotch in a while. Let's do that.
Right.
And it's so embarrassing. Like, I'm just buying a bunch of like really cheap, like a $2 thing of a bunch of like lettuce for salads for the week,
yeah.
And like the cheapest peanut butter they have, and then just like a $30 bottle of scotch.
You, my friend, are a bachelor.
Yep. Hey, at least I fixed my counter. It's beautiful. I polyurethaned it myself. I had a moment of panic where I got some polyurethane on my hands and realized I had no way of getting it off. And I was like, this is just going to be on me. I'm going to have to wait for it to dry, and then I'm going to have to like find something. Like, nail polish remover wouldn't take it off.
Oh, no, yeah.
The guy at the paint store, he gave me a little thing. You know the little tiny model paint things?
Yeah.
He gave me one of those of paint thinner. He's like, this will probably be enough for.
Yeah.
It's not enough. Don't. If someone tells you that,
charity
it's just not true.
Work. Yeah.
I did find a workaround, so I survived.
And what I expect is that the scotch bottle will be half drank and the lettuce will be half rotten at the bottom of the.
The polyurethane will still be on.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's Christmas time, and it's that time of year where we all like to bling. I think we just collectively say, fuck it.
Bling.
I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm just like, I had like 3 Christmas parties this week.
I've been trying.
I got wasted as the week went on. Anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't get any magic in, though. I'm still jonesing since I've been back from vacation. I was going to try to get some yesterday, but...
Dude, you got to get that magic online.
I know.
Get those leagues going.
I have a Chromebook, which is a stupid idea. I understand. The Chromebook and the battery has died now, and so I'm thinking about like, oh man, maybe I should just spring for the PC. And
I got that crappy laptop. The battery also is dead now, but I can use it for Magic Online. I got it on Craigslist for $100.
There you go.
The deals are out there, my friend.
I know. You just got to put the effort in.
I have the same thing. My Mac, like if I don't have it plugged in, it just doesn't work.
Well, the batteries go after so many charge cycles.
Mm-hmm.
They know it. We know it. The computer knows it.
Everyone knows it.
The thing that really sucks, though, is that so I have a Mac and it's like, I look at the thing and they're like, oh, you can schedule an appointment for Monday. And it's Monday. So it's like, not only do I have to wait a week, and then you're like, they say, oh, how long does it take? And they're like, 3 to 5 business days to replace your thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so... like,
you could just buy a new battery.
Yes, but they have to put it in.
Oh, do you have the Air?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You got to get that MacBook Pro, and then you can just open it up. It's easy.
Yeah, I have the MacBook Air. And so I'm like, so 3 to 5 business days? I got to be out there on my computer for like 6 days, 7 days.
Can't write that many emails on my phone.
That's exactly.
It's frustrating.
Hey, when's the last time you tried to get an appointment at the DMV?
Right. Well, those are easy. You just make an appointment online.
Yeah, but like, you can make an appointment for like a month from now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the worst.
The DMV doesn't take away my computer, though, okay? I need this for my lifeblood.
That's true. The bus still exists. Right. I need to browse Reddit and get angry at, you know,
and
Donald
so,
Trump or whatever.
So that was the funny thing I was saying just before we went on casting is that my local Starbucks was pissed at all the literally encampments of street folk that come in there and just sit down and do nothing, buy nothing, and just smell.
Yeah.
And they just like charge
their cell phones. I sit down and do nothing and buy nothing and smell.
At Starbucks?
I take exception. I do it everywhere I go.
And so they went and like covered all the electrical outlets with faceplates, so now you can't charge there at all.
Oh, God.
So now I can't even use my computer.
Dick move.
Total dick move.
Total dick move.
Anti-establishment, man.
Free power for all. Let's make Aether free, or else we're going to have an Aether revolt. Are we talking? Are we a magic podcast? We still do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you know,
Starbucks is definitely the consulate.
You know, fucking Tezzeret is putting Tezzeret's now the CEO of Starbucks, and he's putting it down. He's like, no free energy for anybody, damn it!
Put it in those face plates, tack it a bit.
So would that make the so if Starbucks is the consulate, then the homeless people would be. The gremlins?
Aetherborn.
Aetherborn. Oh, no.
They're short-lived.
Oh, no. This got real dark. Actually, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Hey, that analogy is so real. An unfortunate byproduct of this need to just create an energy source.
Anywho,
Let's learn about capitalism.
Enjoy your families and consider donating to a charity instead of buying something once in a while.
Mm-hmm. I donated to Wikipedia.
There you go.
I donated to a politician that lost.
Well, we all make mistakes.
Anyways, but you guys, speaking of computers, have been playing some magic on your computers. Evan, you've been vintage cubing?
I am more cube than human at this point. No, yeah. I basically use Twitch to quickly figure out whether or not the cube is up on Magic Online.
Nice.
Because my computer takes a while to start up, but I can open Twitch like really easily on my PlayStation.
What'd you find out?
It's up. Vintage cube is up. So get that cube.
What's the difference between the vintage cube and like the legacy cube, holiday cube that they put up? Is it the same thing?
Good question, Cole.
Do you have a good answer?
Taking a sip of his $30 whiskey. Okay, great. The Power 9 in the name? Cube?
Yeah, the Vintage Cube used to be a non-powered like cube. Or maybe I'm thinking of the Legacy Cube.
The Legacy Cube, which they would come out around this time of year.
What the fuck is the difference between the Legacy and the Vintage Cube? Because then the Holiday Cube was like the Vintage Cube. I don't know. I think like someone at WotC just likes to make cubes, and they're just like random iterations of the same sort of general idea.
That they do around this season.
Yeah, like maybe it's got some... Just some different synergies or whatever. It definitely feels a little
Randy
different.
Randy Bueller said he like helped edit the what was the Legacy Cube at that time. But this is this based more off of my question more is this more like a Power 9 cube or is it more like the
Power
vintage format that they released online just cubified and that maybe there's like is it like still the vintage format that they used that they ran for only that small amount of time?
I don't think cubified's a word.
Cubified.
Look, if Evan can be more cube than man, he can be cubified.
I'm cube born. I don't really know. I mean so I remember the difference between the Legacy Cube and the Holiday Cube.
Yeah.
Like the Holiday Cube is the one that they like bring back all the time. And that's like a powered cube, and then it just has like all of the cards that people love from Magic's history that are like insanely powerful and whatever. And I think the Vintage Cube does also have the Power 9 in there. Like, you know, we've got some Moxes and some Ancestral Recalls and some what have yous. Seen some Black Lotuses, you know, they go around. I don't really know what the difference is between the Vintage Cube and the Holiday Cube.
Yeah.
I think it's just like, I guess some of the color pairs have like a slightly different focus.
Right. Probably something like that.
Like, I've definitely noticed a slightly different feel. Like, it feels like it has more newer cards than, like, they're trying to show off more of the newer cards a little bit.
And these cards just go into like the neither, right? You don't actually ever own
it. No.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't own any of the cube cards, but just it does cost tickets to play, right?
Yeah, tickets or play points or whatever. Yeah. It's like $10 to draft it, basically.
And can you play it in league format so you don't have to sit
down? Yeah, I've been doing the league, which is really great, because like, it's hard for me to sit there and do the draft and then play three rounds and
like
staring at a computer
hours.
The whole time.
Or like...
Yeah, three...
Two and a half, maybe, right?
Like,
yeah.
Like half an hour, 40 minutes to draft, and then like, you know... 45 minutes minimum each round.
Right.
Plus, like, waiting in between, and you're just, like, on your toes because, like, the match just starts and your counter starts ticking down. And it's just, like, kind of a nightmare. But the leagues are nice because you can, like, you know, do as much as you feel like
you
and then
pick
stop.
Up and play.
Yeah.
This is what they adopted after Hearthstone started taking off, and they're like, yeah, we should probably do this too.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sit at the computer for 3.5 hours.
Yeah, the only weird thing with the leagues especially in Cube, is, you know, it's a singleton format. So, like, then you, like the other day, I played against a guy.
You must have mirror matches in a way that you never would in the draft, right?
At least in the way that you never would in a Cube. Like, right. You know, when you play Cube, you're never going to play against any of the cards that are in your deck, right. And you can, like, plan for that. So I drafted a sort of white control deck that just had every, like, Oblivion Ring variant in it. Yeah. And then I played another guy who had the same deck. No. So it was just like, I'll Banishing Light your Oblivion Ring. I'll Oblivion Ring your Banishing Light.
Play Banishing Priest.
I'll War Priest of Thune your whatever. And it was just, like, back and forth. It was kind of a nightmare.
Did you crash the system?
No, because you need three Oblivion Rings to do that.
Have you seen that one that LSV crashes? So LSV is playing this one thing, and he's playing like one of those cubes.
Yeah.
And he's just wrecking.
No, it's just standard. This was when Oblivion Ring was in standard.
Okay, yeah. So he's going along, and he's literally just wrecking the guy, and he goes, oh my God. So I could play this like third Oblivion Ring, and I think I just blow up the world when I do this. And I'm winning right now, but I am recording this, so I really just want to see what happens. Yeah, because it doesn't.
Because the way that Oblivion Ring worked is there were no other non-land permanents on the battlefield except for his opponent's Oblivion Ring on his Oblivion Ring.
Right.
His opponent Oblivion Ring to his Oblivion Ring.
Right.
And everything else was gone except for lands. And Oblivion Ring is not a may, it's a you must exile. Mm-hmm. So it has to have a target, it has to exile that thing. So when you Oblivion Ring your opponent's Oblivion Ring that has your Oblivion Ring underneath it, you have to choose that Oblivion Ring. So that Oblivion Ring leaves the battlefield. Your Oblivion Ring that was under that Oblivion Ring comes back into the battlefield, must target the Oblivion Ring that you've played, and it just creates this infinite loop, which you have... No one gets priority during this.
Yeah.
Well, no. Actually, you get priority, but his opponent had F6th, and so he's like, let's just see what happens, and he plays it in F6s, and it just starts cycling, and then it, like, stops, and then the screen, like, the little window that opens up with, like, triggers that go on the stack, like, fills up, and then it just stops and crashes.
And then it reloads, and it starts doing it, and then it just does it again, and he's like, he goes, oh, that was pretty cool. Yeah,
we should remember that epic. When the robots take over.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hilarious. So that's what's interesting about the league cube, though, is that you're going to play decks that are going to actually have your cards in them. So that probably changes up things in an interesting way.
Yeah, it also makes it so like that one aggro asshole at the table, you might play twice in your league, which sucks. Yeah. Which happened to me when I drafted this like dirtily white deck. I like played against the guy playing Burn, and he destroyed me.
Mm-hmm.
Even after I resolved to timely reinforcements, he still destroyed me. And then the next guy I played was like white weenie aggro, and it was just it was so brutal.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a diversity of deck archetypes in the format? Like, you don't see the same thing over and over and over again?
You see the same kind of things, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. I know I haven't. I've only drafted it, like, you know, like three times since it came online. But, I mean, the cubes are just set up in such a way that, you know, you open a pack and the world is your oyster.
It
like,
is.
Anything can happen. You can do any sort of kind of fun thing you want.
I mean, it has to be the allure of it, right? Like, just, like, super fun, broken stuff.
Cubes are amazing for that act of discovery, and like what the best thing about Cube is that it highlights card interactions that you may not have seen before. I think the best moments I've had in Cube, at least with especially designing my own, is when you like get, you know, two cards on the board and one in your hand, and you're like, oh wait a minute, but then if I do this, then this triggers, and then I get three more of these, and then if I sack those two, and then that triggers this thing, and that like that kind of Johnny Giddy you get from the combination is the best. It's the best high of Cube.
I totally had that moment yesterday, and unfortunately, this combo did not. There was a counterspell that happened, and ruined my fun. But it was like game three. I was playing this guy who had like a real artifact heavy strategy, which these cubes tend to have, like Mere Battlesphere. His like big payoffs were Mere Battlesphere and what's the worm that the 6/6
Worm Coil Engine.
What's funny is Sundering Titan stuff
with
like
these
that.
Power cubes, you get a they tend to weight artifacts a little bit, and artifacts kind of almost sometimes become a six color in some of these kind of
legacy cubes. Yeah, they have cards like Mishra's Workshop, which it's like a land that has three mana, and then you can only use that mana to do artifacts, and then like just Tezzeret that gets artifacts, and just like artifacts matter stuff. And so I played a Reclamation Sage and destroyed one of his just whatever artifacts. I was trying to like kill him before shit went down. And I had a Skull Clamp, which is, you know, the sweetest card ever.
Yeah. One of on the battlefield. Probably the most busted equipment ever printed.
And then I drew Bribery. Three blue, blue, search your opponent's library for a creature, and then you put it on the battlefield under your control. And I had played this card on my opponent before, so I knew all the big creatures that was in his deck, and I was like, wait, he has Sun Titan in his deck. I can go get his Sun Titan with the Bribery, attach the Skull Clamp to my
to your Reclamation,
Sage. Kill the Reclamation Sage. The Rex Sage dies. I just get the Rex Sage back with the Sun Titan, kill his next thing. Then every time I attack with the Sun Titan, I get to return my Reclamation Sage, kill one of his things, attach the Skull Clamp to it, and draw two cards.
Yeah.
For like a one mana and attack every turn was like
seems good
with a 6/6 Fielder Lance or something.
Yeah, like. and like when you're deck building, like I was just building a deck.
No, you don't see it almost until you again have it two cards on the battlefield and one in your hand. You're like, yeah. Wait a minute.
Or when you're building your deck, and I was like, you know, my five drop slot had a goblin. What's the new goblin that the like five mana one that you can play a card from your
Goblin Dark Dwellers?
Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Dark Dwellers.
Three mana cost less spell from your graveyard, right? The 4/4?
Oh, no. Sorry, I was thinking of the Torrential Gearhulk. Gearhulk and...
Did they put that in the Legacy Cube?
Yeah. What's the five mana gain control of a creature on tap, five lands?
Treachery.
It was like Gearhulk and Treachery. How about one mana, get a 4/5 flash, take your biggest dude?
Yeah,
I'll take that. I think that's a good combo.
Treachery's an enchantment,
and then he countered it.
Oh, wait, Treachery's an enchantment. Okay, never mind. None of these things work. I don't know what I'm talking about.
But you can do it with technically an instant.
Treachery's a sorcery, isn't it?
I think it is an enchantment. I remember now because
Urza Saga, dude, that card. Oh my god, my blue decks that I used to play. So for new time listeners, Evan and I have known each other since the third grade, where we met playing Magic.
Big mistake.
And at that time, I had, you know. Realized, like everybody else, that Counterspell was very powerful and Control Magic was amazing, and just built blue decks that were just full of Treachery, Thieving Magpie, Counterspells, and lands.
You were the enemy.
That was nasty. But no, Treachery is a broken card, but it is an enchantment. But there's probably a way that you can make Torrential. It's so funny. Torrential Gearhulk's showing up in some modern play. It's like showing up in some of these Jeskai Control decks and things like that.
I made a top eight.
Yeah.
And the whole question was, do you think there's enough instants? And I don't know why we didn't fucking think that was going to happen, right? The answer is yes.
Yes.
Cryptic Command?
Yeah. That's starting to show up now, like Gearhulk, Cryptic Command, and...
What are some instants that untap all your lands after you play them?
Rewind untaps Counterspell.
Rewind, well, that's pretty good. Lands. Two mana. Yeah.
That was one of my favorite Counterspells of that blue deck of mine. It was like, you get the two mana Counterspell, and then you rewind, you capsize in the same turn.
For buyback.
Torrential Gearhulk plus rewind is a two mana 4/5 Mystic Snake.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Anyways.
This is a fun game to play. But yeah, Cube's great. I've been really enjoying it.
I know. I'm itching to dust mine off and get the old Top Wizard League back together. But Larry, you also played some Magic Online too. You and Zach took down a draft in Kaladesh, right?
Yep.
Awesome.
We were gonna go draft at the game store and then we were like,
it's December. Let's stay inside and play Moto Online.
Yeah, so we drafted. We actually recorded it just so that we could show the.
Oh, great! We'll have to link it in our show notes.
And then his roommate watched, and as his roommate described it, we played like the 12-year-old big fatty deck with like some fight cards.
This is Kaladesh.
This is Kaladesh. Yeah, Triple Kaladesh.
Any hallmark? What was the color pair?
So it was mostly green.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were almost all green until pack three.
Wow.
We hadn't actually really had a
green choice. Was very open.
Yeah, I mean, it was completely open.
Is that because green is maybe a less picked color, or is it just your seating?
Well, I don't think it's a less picked color. I mean, it's...
It was in that draft.
Yeah, in that draft. I mean, it is the deepest of the colors.
Okay.
Most of the pros agreed to that. So it could be that, like, it could support two fully green drafters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like Evan was saying, is that you don't necessarily see the same person in your draft pod, right?
Right.
So you don't really know, like, you know, if you get to the finals and you meet the other green player, then you're like, oh, that makes sense,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But so you never know. But yeah, it was so, I mean, our deck felt like it was like a third artifacts and two thirds green going into pack three.
What were you splashing in that case?
So our other color was black.
Uh-huh.
And we had things like, you know, Piccata Pillar Bug.
Yes. Probably the best of that artifact. I mean, the blue one's pretty good, right? The 2/4 that flies.
Yeah, I'm not really sure which one. I mean, I actually like the red one a lot, too, if you're, like, super aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
The Menace ones. You know, and some
people... Death Touch. Oh, no, sorry. The green one's the Death Touch.
Yeah, the green one is, like... I know people like the green one. I would have taken them had we seen them. We never saw one.
Yeah.
But then we had like, what's the 5-mana kill spell? The gains life.
Oh, for each artifact you have, right?
Yeah.
Like so assassins, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Something it's like just that. One of those ambiguous 5-mana assassinate spells that they've been printing since the beginning of time, like with like the stupidest text attached to it.
Tidy conclusion.
Yeah, tidy conclusion.
You gain life. You destroy a land. I actually remember Prophecy, the one that destroyed a land. That one was pretty good. Anyway, sorry.
So I guess the only couple things though, I just wanted like I'll just pose to the group as the kind of two like serious points was, so pack one, pick one. Mm-hmm. We had Territorial Gorger as a rare, which is nothing. So the key things that were
what was
there,
that guy do?
He's the 2/2 for red and three, and every time you get an energy, he gets +2/+2, and he's trample. So he's really kind of bad.
Red and three?
Red and three for a 2/2 trample, and then every time you get an energy, no matter how you get it, you get +2/+2 until...
All right. See, I mean, that seems good.
I think he's terrible.
I think you got really...
I guess he's a 4/4 a lot of the... No, he's like a...
I don't think he's a...
6/6 a lot of the time.
You have to gain energy for him to do that. Not
yeah.
use energy.
No, I know.
And it's really hard to gain energy on a consistent basis.
If you suck...
Yeah.
If you're not gorging...
If you're a chump, you gotta be gorging.
Yeah.
If you're not a gremlin just fucking eating shit.
That's the type of rare you want to see, like, fifth pick when you're building that energy deck. And you're like, yeah, sweet, because I'm, like, doing this already.
Yeah.
Not first pick and go, like, oh, fuck, I have to build an energy deck to make this too good.
Yeah, or, like, it's, like, seventh pick and nobody wants it, and you randomly pick the energy deck.
That's
you don't want to,
like,
pick it first pick
pass
and go.
Around no, rare. Yeah. That's the one where you, like, you take, like, maybe, what's the, what does it do, 2 damage, and then... It's 2 and it deals damage equal to the amount of energy that you have, and it gives you 3 energy. What is that card?
Harness lightning.
Like, you take the harness lightning first and you hope to wheel that one around
to build
your red green energy deck.
Yeah.
It is a little awkward because it forces you a lot of the time to play your spells pre-combat.
Yeah.
But that being said, if you have
you could attack if it's an instant. Like, you could harness lightning something.
Yeah. But I mean, like, how many of those are you going to have in your deck, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you have, like, a repeatable source of energy gaining, like, decoction module or something.
Yeah.
Dealed cuck module. then
you
have, like,
had
the
work it in.
Had to work it in.
Anyways. Okay, so what was your pack one, pick one?
So pack one, pick one, the notables to me are there's the Bomat Bazaar Barge,
mm-hmm.
Which is the 5/5 for 4. When it comes into play, you draw a card, and it's crew 3.
Solid.
So it's a solid dude. And then another uncommon was the Foundry Inspector,
mm-hmm.
who's a 3/2 for 3, mm-hmm. and all your artifacts cost 1 less.
Mm-hmm.
And then, to me, the other reasonable one is the Hunt the Weak at green and 3, put a +1/+1 on your guy, and fight. So that's kind of like...
Hunt the Weak.
The major things that were there. There is also a Malfunction, but I'm not a big fan of that card.
Is that the blue
Yeah, blue one. Tap. Blue
yeah.
and 3.
Really? You're not a fan of that one?
there's just so many bounce effects and
right.
so many blink effects.
Right,
and
white.
I mean, I think it's fine, and it's never not going to make my deck.
But it's not first.
But
pickable.
It's not like...
Also, is blue a color that you want to be first picking into often, no. outside of a rare or something no. stupid?
Yeah, not me.
Yeah. It seems like such a... It's funny. It feels like this is another expansion cycle where green is yet again very deep, and blue is weirdly in this support realm where you're like, it's like,
yeah,
I'll get into it late, but I'm not into it in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly feels like a support color. Yeah. Like you get like blue green energy, or you get black blue control. And every time it's like it just feels like the blue is kind of just
there,
yeah,
for the one off. Two off malfunctions and whatever yeah. draw spell.
Anyways. What are the blue cards you're happy to first pick in Kaladesh?
Turnswick Gearhawk.
non-rares.
Glimmer of Genius.
Really?
I think the card's
probably.
Like... I think it's
no, a, I mean happy to first pick.
I think it'd be happy.
I mean, Gearseeker Serpent's a powerhouse. That's a good
yeah,
card.
But again, I don't want to pick that.
You don't want
to pick that first.
Yeah, right.
Wow. No,
the closest I can come to, I can think of, is like Glintnest Crane, maybe.
So non-rare?
Non-rare, yeah.
It's either, there are a lot of rares.
Don't name a mythic. I will jump out this window if you name a mythic.
No, because I was thinking there are some other ones. There's like, there's a bunch of rares that are really great, like Padim,
yeah.
Saheeli's
yes.
Artistry, Confiscation Coup. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many like rares that are really, really great. And then you're like, but then you like name a non-rare and you're like, sad face.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. Yeah. I do like me like a Glintnest Crane.
Is a Cloud Blazer? Is that count as blue?
Yeah, you know what? Why not?
You gotta add white.
They
to
need
it
a
for it
they
to
need a
good,
shout but... out. They need yeah. something.
So anyhow, for this pack, what Zach and I took was the Bomat Bazaar Barge.
Yeah.
And it's a fatty. It keeps you open.
I'm with you there. I'm with you there for the strategy of keeping you open early in the draft. Like,
yeah,
that.
I'm
I
like,
I think it's a big thing. Like, I mean, yeah. it's, you know,
on power level, I'm kind of like not very excited.
I think it's actually pretty
it's
decent.
Fine.
It's a 5-5.
I mean, for,
yeah, but it's not
for the
exciting.
Artifacts. It's. I mean, for the you know.
Yes, it's not a torrential gearhawk, and you didn't open a bomb, but you know.
I mean, or just like a there's like commons that are better than that card, you know. It's like many commons that I would be much more excited to first pick than that card.
Like what? Outside of removal. What other common creature?
Well, let's go to pack two, pick
Harness
one.
Harness Lightning. What's the...
Is there another creature that you'd be excited to first pick outside of...
There's some green creatures I would love to... What the 3-mana 2/2 that you can like put counters on it or something?
Maybe like Long Tusk Cub.
There's some green energy creatures.
Yeah. That cub Freighter. Is for real.
Cub, yeah. Freighter.
So Cub is well that's an uncommon, but that's green, but yeah, there's another card that's just crazy.
Okay, so what was your pack two pick one?
Okay, so
but you mean pack one pick two?
No, pack two pick one.
Oh, we're just going all the way to the second
yeah,
pack.
Yeah, so no,
and don't tell us what happened in pack one. Just let us
you
imagine.
Stayed open and then you ended up in green?
So yeah, we stayed open and we did have a bunch. So I'll give you the highlights of what we had. So we had a Seed Sculptor, a Hunt the Weak, 2 Pima Outriders, the Bazaar Barge, a Ballista mm-hmm. Charger, and a Tiger. So that's kind of what we had for our things.
Mm-hmm.
So then in pack two, pick one, our rare is a Boo. It's Lost Legacy. And then our
literally,
uncommons.
It's a Boo.
It's a Boo. And then our uncommons, the only thing that's really relevant
is Boo.
Chief of the Foundry.
P is dead mm-hmm. Boo.
So he's 3/2/3, and all your other artifact creatures get +1/+1.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, really good.
Definitely better than the Inspector, which I don't think I would first pick any more, even. I mean, I think we had that Crack Sack of Berry where we talked about it, and mm-hmm. the Inspector is not as good as you think it is.
No.
It's fine, but
we
yeah,
ended,
I mean,
we,
not as good
we,
as you think it is.
We ended
I
up
mean,
getting...
I mean, it is as good as I think it is. I think it's fine.
It's fine. we actually did end up getting one in our deck.
Oh, nice.
And he ended up being, like, pretty decent because we had, like, the Bazaar Barge.
Oh, man, if you can just roll him in
Charger
Bazaar Barge.
And,
yeah.
If you got a bunch of 3-mana artifacts, it's really good because you can play them on 3, untap, and play 2 on turn 4.
It's true, and I've done that before, and that is sweet.
Feels really good. Any turn where you can get 2 extra mana out of your, like, cost reduction effect, you're, like, doing it.
Yeah.
And you can, like, really swing again.
Doing it. You're reducing them costs.
Reducing them costs.
So they got the Chief of the Foundry. And then in the commons, we've got Hunt the Weak, Malphite Squad, which we're, you know, we have like one black card and that's it. And then we have also a Renegade Freighter. So
it's getting so away from you.
You're looking at maybe Hunt the Weak Renegade Freighter.
Yeah.
Or maybe Chief.
Yeah, or maybe Chief.
How many artifact creatures do you have at this point?
So we have the Pillar Bug, the Bazaar Barge, and the Ballista Charger.
And the Peafowl.
And the Peafowl, which we're hoping not to play.
Right. I probably don't take Chief if I have under three creatures. And like not crew, like creatures. Because that guy gets better. Or like unless I have more fabricate ways to do.
Yeah. And
once you get the two riders, right?
Yep.
So that's something.
But I mean,
Freighter though.
Yeah. So that's what we took was the Freighter.
Yeah.
Gotta take that Freighter.
Come on,
gotta get on that train.
Like C plus uncommon or A plus common. They're pretty close. That Freighter is.
Yeah, I don't actually at the end of the day, I don't think they're actually all that close. I think the Freighter is better than a lot of rares. Yeah.
I'd have to.
Is it just clearly consensus best common in the format?
That or Welding Sparks.
Okay.
I feel like I haven't played enough to have a good sense of this. I feel like it's probably the best common first pick.
Yes.
Yes.
Just the other thing is like, yeah, exactly. That's a good, just, it's a fair exactly point. Exactly what we were just saying. Like, yeah. You know, do you want Welding Sparks, which puts you in red, or do you want a Freighter, which puts you in nothing?
And that's why I think clear pack one, pick one. Freighter is best because of the strategy of staying open. Best common, I think it's probably a good toss up between Welding Sparks or Freighter.
I think
just as overall, just like common.
I think you're going to want Welding Sparks in every deck you play, and there's like decks where I wouldn't. I'd play a Freighter, but
you also, if you pick a Freighter, you're probably going to make it work in your deck. Like you're not if you pick a Freighter, you're probably not going to go and like if you pack one pick control. One a Freighter, you're not going to go, oh, I'm going to make this like control deck.
Yeah, but there's like situations where I can get past you and you're like, maybe this isn't what this deck wants.
I guess that just doesn't happen in my reality. I don't really make those. Even like, you know, I've even seen. So I watched, and this was weeks and weeks and weeks ago. But I mean, I saw Reed Duke play, and he was playing like some like controlling blue black control deck. And he got past a Freighter and he's like, well, still an artifact. I don't really see how they deal with it, even if I like just attack. So I'm just going to take this. and then he like ends up literally in like the three matches. He ends up winning like two games when he just goes turn three Freighter, you know, untap and do it. And like, you know, the guy just basically has to use so many resources to kill it that like, you know, all of his control stuff then just wrecks him. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those cards where like in this particular comparison to like the things that the cards do are so different from each other that it's a little hard to compare. I mean, the Welding Spark's obviously much more flexible and in a lot of situations more powerful. The Freighter just like turn three, you know, with a creature curve and being able to crew it and attack on turn four is just so hard to deal with.
Yeah, especially go first too.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you go first and you Freighter out, it's.
But that's a lot of ifs, you know.
It's like, a lot of ifs.
If you top deck it, well, on a board stall, it's not really going
to
do anything.
Honestly, the question comes down to, and this is what the beauty of Magic is the ability to kind of have your player preference in the way that you want to play the game. Do you want the top common threat of the format, or do you want the top common answer of the format? You know, which one do you value? Because I think it's kind of close.
We talked about this last week too. Remember about like, you know, pros sliding into more like
threat heavy
because the threats are getting to be much more aggressive and much harder. Yeah.
You might say more threatening, but yeah, again, it really depends on what's in my deck.
Yeah.
If we're just talking first picks, it's Freighter all the way. If I can see a situation where I'd take one over the other, where I would take Welding Sparks over the Freighter though. And I don't think that's a crazy situation.
No, not at all. No, not at all. I mean, I think, again, objectively, they're both close. I think just the artifact-ness alone in pack one, pick one probably edges the Freighter a little bit. But
I mean, ideally, you have them both in your deck.
Oh, God, yes, you do. Of course you do. Because
So the other thing that ended up at the end of the day that we had that was really, really cool was we ended up playing like a super aggressive deck with a good amount of removal, but we also had two Ornamental Courage, which is
what
also...
What does that do again?
So it untaps a creature and gives it +1/+3.
Oh, right. So it's like green? Is it one green?
Green, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess I'll play this if I have nothing else to
this
do.
Right, this is like, oh,
it's,
man,
it's
I'm really...
It's Pormen's Blossoming Defense, right?
Yeah,
right.
And like Blossoming Defense is like, fine. You
it's
know.
Still 23rd, like 21st to 23rd card in your deck.
So just for the record, it's really, really good when you Ornamental Courage your choo-choo. Because that thing becomes
6, what, 6-6?
So it becomes a 5-4, and then it's 6-7 trample, untapped.
Mm.
Jeez.
And, you know, they're like, oh, I'll just double block it, or I'll just, like, I'll block it with my 3-3 and take the damage. And you're like, nope.
They, like, have to.
Exactly.
You have to double block that thing to get rid of it.
You do, and that's
if
why
you want to kill it
if you've
like,
got
turn
any
six
combat trick or removal spell, instant speed removal spell, like, you can just blow people out of the
Yeah, like, the, so, like, what our guy, one guy, he's like, he blocks with a 3-3 and a 3-3. So, he's like, so you can't kill both, even if you kill one, right? Mm-hmm. Then I still, like, at least, you know, don't get 2-for-1, right?
Yeah.
And then we cast that and it becomes Whoops. A 6-7. And the guy, you could just, like, I sitting there thinking.
Shatter pause, sorry.
Yeah. And then the other last thing that was really super cool is we had at one point we had four guys on the board, and we were playing this like super aggressive Flyers deck that had like the Angel of Invention and then had the Blinky Angel too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it was just we were really really just under the gun the whole way. He went first, and we had four dudes, which were like just, you know, a bunch of stuff like, you know, a Pima Outrider and like a Seed Sculptor and like something. And we had two of our vehicles. But so it's like we didn't really actually have more creatures because we just had two vehicles. Mm-hmm. And we had one of the Ornamental Courages in our hand. And it was basically the last turn because he's going to fly over and kill us for like, you know, do 8 damage in the air next turn. And we untap and I'm like, and then he's like, oh, man, I just wish we could do something here. And I'm like, actually, I think we win. And he's like, what? So I'm like, you just tap this, crew this guy, tap this, crew this guy, and play the second Ornamental Courage that we just got. And we untap both of those guys.
Oh, no.
So as Evan pointed out there, he had Ghost
Riders. Ghost Ride the Whip.
Oh, no.
So now we have, like, instead of having four dudes, right, we have actually 6 dudes and, like, he just basically had to block. He had to block so that he didn't die. And so one of his guys, like, there was 4-4 Flying Angel, had to block not to die. And he had to block with another one of his things not to die, too. Because we had, like, a 5-5 barge and,
so
like,
just
a...
just wiped out his board?
Yeah, you got a 5-5 barge and a 5-3 trample, like, thing. So he's got to block something, right? And then he didn't actually have lethal, and then we just basically won the next turn. So it was really sweet to actually win, like, a
it's
really
a, it's
weird...
It's a great line.
It's a great line, yeah.
The Are there other ways to untap your creatures in this format?
There's, like, a blue spell that untaps.
There's that Panjeet guy, the Panjeet Sentry or whatever.
There's that uncommon...
The blue guy that spends energy to tap or untap something.
Dramatic reversal. Yeah.
You did not just...
What?
We do not mention that card.
Wait, Panjeet...
I'm sure we don't, but I mean, I'm just like sad.
Panjeet guy has to tap himself, though, right? Did you pay 2 energy and tap him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that defeats the purpose.
No, but I mean, you can like do some pretty crazy things. I mean, I've watched people just totally get blown out. Like,
yeah, he's a good card. But I'm just trying to think of other ways that you can engineer the situation because I want to be in a position where I can look at my board and go... Let's Ghost Ride the Whip. And then...
So one of the ones where I saw the guy just totally get blown out is he's like attacks with his 4-4 Pima Outrider, and he's like, look, you know, I'll crew my 5-5 Bazaar Barge, right? And then he's like spend energy and untap it, and the guy just like runs his Pima Outrider right into the barge.
Oops.
So yeah, so we can
that post, Outrider don't swim.
Yeah, we can post the link for this, and
Yeah, just so you guys recorded it, and you recorded your audio and everything, too?
We recorded the audio. We didn't do any of the games, but just the actual draft.
Oh, okay, cool. So we can watch you guys draft.
So, yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's like 30 minutes.
Don't try to watch it on your phone. You'll have no idea what's happening.
Yep, so if you want to waste...
That was my experience today.
If you want to waste 18 minutes...
We will have a link in the show description.
Hey, yeah. I waste like at least 3 hours every week recording this podcast.
Anyways, actually, now that we've been back, some of our listeners have chimed in. We love it when our listeners chimed in. In fact,
you think that I really appreciate that people are
responding to the podcast now that we're back.
Yeah,
it honestly, it's like, oh yeah, this is why we do this.
Does it give you the warm fuzzies?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
I don't feel so alone. I can normally I stare into the abyss, and the abyss just
stares back.
Sort of stares back. But this time, I stare into the abyss, and someone taps me on the shoulder and goes like, "Hey, dude, you want to like stop that?" I'm like, "Oh, okay. I guess I'll turn around and get back to regular life." Wow. Crack, Sack, and Barry, the segment where we take three
Happy
cards
holidays, everybody. I hope you're enjoying your family.
Okay, Scrooge.
Anyways, sorry. Yes, Crack, Sack, and Barry this week was actually provided by a listener. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I outsourced this week Crack, Sack, and Barry to our Facebook page. So if you follow us on Facebook.
Lazy.
What?
Nothing. Keep going.
Yeah. Hey, look, it happened for me. Look, I wanted to engage our listeners and... A fun thing happened because of it.
So let me get this straight. You were staring into the abyss, and the abyss came back and said, "Yes, I'll do your work for you."
I was staring into the abyss, and then after a while, I was like, "You know, I should probably get off Facebook and get back to work."
Anyways,
What did we get this week? You screwed up my plug. You should follow us on Facebook because I think I'm going to start doing this. I think our new schedule is we're going to record on Wednesdays, and I'm going to like post an update on the Facebook page every Wednesday and be like, "Hey, we're recording. If you have any questions or you know Crack, Sack, and Barry suggestions or just like random shit you want us to talk about, then you know you can do it there and we'll take a look and we'll try to."
Totally, it was actually remarkable and super fun to have the listener engagement and something that we would love to do.
Yeah, so this week's Crack, Sack, and Barry, the segment where we take three cards on the theme and choose one we want to crack, we're excited to play it, one we want to sack, we'll sacrifice it if we have to, and one we want to bury if it gets destroyed, we won't regenerate it, is submitted by Eric Simonson, and he wants us to crack, sack, and bury. There's no theme here, dude. I mean...
They're all rare.
They are all rare, and they are all spoilers.
Wow, first listener supported, and now you get called out, thrown under the bus.
I mean, he did pick two enchantments.
That's true. I definitely made dumb jokes about at least one of these cards in the last episode.
Yeah.
But these are just some of the new spoilers. The new spoiled cards. Oh, God, the page got away from me.
Aether Revolt spoilers.
Consulate Crackdown. Is bringing it up 3 white for an enchantment. When Consulate Crackdown enters the battlefield, exile all artifacts your opponents control until Consulate Crackdown leaves the battlefield.
The workshops are silent. Our creations have been seized. They have killed what made us alive.
This card's going to be a great sideboard card in Powered Cube. Disallow, which I believe is the new Counterspell,
yep.
Right? 1 blue for an instant counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. Ooh. Wow.
I never thought they would make a better Civic counterspell than, what is it, Void Slime? This is Void Slime, except it doesn't cost, instead of, Void Slime was green, blue, counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability.
What's the card people play in Legacy that just counters
counter flux counters everything
no.
on the stack
no.
That counters all the spells in the stack.
Yeah,
there's a blue card that people play in Legacy sometimes that just counters
the ability.
Activated abilities and triggered abilities,
and it just costs 1 blue.
Yeah, like
right,
but it doesn't counter spells, so like people try to get people by just like countering people's fetch. It's just like, no, just stone rain yourself, asshole. I forget what it's called.
It's got to be one of the top things you could possibly
misstep.
No,
I don't know. I don't know anything about these.
Anyways,
cards.
And the flavor text on this one's good too. How easily your flames are quenched.
Ooh,
these are story cards.
Chief of compliance,
right?
That sounds like compliance.
It's like sounds like so like
yeah. I believe that guy's the new Secretary of the Interior.
Yeah, it's like he's got a middle management position
in the Trump administration.
Yeah, he's like the guy that everyone at the office hates. And finally, Pia's Revolution. 2 in a red for an enchantment. Whenever a non-token artifact is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, return that card to your hand. Unless target opponent has Pia's Revolution, deal 3 damage to him or her. This is the artwork that's Young Pyromancer meets...
Knocks it on Warhammer.
What's the red guy with Soul Bond that gives guys haste?
Lightning
Berserker.
Yes.
Because he's in that pose and he's got a hammer. I don't know. Kills me.
I have a hammer and I'll use it. Let's see. Flavor text. Pia's passion was directed at the big picture and making real lasting change. That one's not as much fun.
You do that with a hammer, apparently.
Yeah. Real change only comes under a hammer.
All right. Slow down there. Pia's Revolution. I'll take this off.
There's no chance on this that I don't know what your crack is. There's just no chance.
What?
There's no chance you're not picking that counter spell.
I don't know. I was going to go with Consulate Crackdown, honestly.
Really? Yes. Oh, my God. I'm just shocked.
Only because I think that... I'm evaluating this on probably maybe my perspective of what will be a standard card. Like, of these three, which will probably make it into a top 8 deck list. And I think Consulate Crackdown is just too good of a sideboard card in a world of Thopters and...
Renegade Freighters
and all this kind of stuff. I mean, I think you got Aetherworks Marvel. You've got a lot of hard to deal with artifacts, and even if it's almost like the Quarantine Field effect.
There it is. Stifle.
Right.
Sorry about that fetch land, bro. Oh, it's such
that's
a good,
the counter spell we were trying to remember.
That's,
yes.
That's such a good name, too. Like, stifle you.
Right.
Okay.
Anyways.
Sort of crack down on your...
Yeah.
That the Consulate Crackdown will be stifling when it's, say, often 2-for-1 or 3-for-1.
I just wish it didn't cost so much, honestly.
Yeah.
I wish it was like 4. Like, I mean, it's such a...
Right.
It's such a hoser card anyhow, right?
I think they're thinking that this will... feel maybe like a Wrath effect, and so they're a little bit worried about pricing it under 5 mana, because now in the world your answer all Wrath effects need to cost at least 5 mana. I think it's a cheaper option than Quarantine Field and could often yield the same effect, which is being a clean 2-for-1, and with hard to deal with artifacts it seems kind of legit.
The only problem is that even though this whole set feels like an artifacts matters, and it does, like especially say in like draft, Standard doesn't feel very artifacts matters.
Yeah, who's ever been attacked by a smuggler's cop?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I mean, that's just...
That's true. There's not a lot of, like, stuff that cares about the fact that it's an artifact.
Yeah, like, I mean, so, yeah. For instance...
There's no affinity as, like, a...
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of my thing. Like, there's...
You have powerful artifacts, but not...
But they're, like, they seem like singular ones, deck. And they've already done their thing. Like for instance, like, this card's not going to do anything against, like, Aether Marvel Works, right? They're gonna like, oh, I play Marvel Works and spend 6 energy and wreck you, right?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, it'll get rid of the.
Yeah, but you're already dead to like the Ulamog or the Emrakul that's already out there.
Hey, look, if that's the only way the game's played out, then you'd be right. But life is complicated.
What I like about this card also is that it exiles only your opponent's artifacts.
Yeah, that's
and
fucking
so I
sweet.
Can see it probably sitting more on the sideboards, yeah, of like, this is what you bring in again when you are the red white artifact. Red white vehicles deck against your opponent's red white vehicles deck, and you're like, okay, now all your vehicles go away, and I swing in with all my guys, and then they play theirs.
There's a good example. It seems like red white vehicles would get hurt significantly.
Yeah,
by this.
This
card.
Is what this is the deal with.
If you're not
gonna wreck
dead.
That red black deck you've been playing.
Yes,
right. I think this is too slow.
Can't even get your scroungers back?
Scrapyard scroungers go away.
And of course, you're playing red-black, so you got no fucking chance of getting rid of an artifact, right?
Yeah.
Enchantment.
Or enchantment.
Yeah. Enchantment, yeah.
You're like, oh, there go all my scroungers.
Okay, so then I'm going to go into the sack with Disallow. Yeah, don't underestimate counter target activated ability or triggered ability. You know, void slimes in my cube. I have a multicolored cube, so like it goes in there in the Simic column, just because it's a Hallmark Simic card. But man, it feels really shitty when you play Thragtusk and your opponent like counters it, or you play. That's not a good example. I'm trying to think of like where the triggered ability is.
Would you like me to give you a perfect example?
Okay. Yeah.
Any Eldrazi. Pick one.
No. My Planeswalker goes ultimate.
Oh, right.
Oh, God.
I sacrifice my Planeswalker to go ultimate.
Yes, there you go.
No! Where'd you go?
Yeah. There's just a lot of wiggle room with a versatile counterspell like this that you don't often think about, and then sometimes it comes up and can make all the difference with, like, any kind of, like, I'm trying to... Enter the battlefield ones are tough to visualize because you would just counter the spell that is entering the battlefield originally. But there are times when, you know, the game comes down to an activation.
Ooh, this is going to be great against, well, not great, but a nice bulwark against Avacyn in a lot of ways.
Right.
It can either stop the indestructibility trigger, right, or it can stop the flip trigger. Or you can let it flip and stop the damage thing, like depending on how your cards match up with theirs.
Yeah, if they think that's going to win them the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can really get them out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it's surprising. You don't think about it, but
say like you're tapped out, right? And the end of turn they play their Avacyn, then they sack something, and then you untap, and then they're like, okay, now the trigger goes on the stack, and you're like, nope.
Yes, it goes on the stack, and now it goes off the stack.
Yeah.
Wait. So, what is the biggest bummer in the world that you have to use this? Like, I'm trying to imagine the situation where you have to counter some ability because you know it's going to kill you, but you really don't want to because it's such a bad use of a card. And also, what's the absolute best? Like, what's the best Planeswalker ultimate to counter as well? That's like the biggest blowout in your favor.
If like if they've been like protecting Chandra to get it to whatever so that they can just cast like one or two spells and kill you for 5/5 and you're done, right? Instead you're like, nope, you get nothing.
Yeah, probably countering a Planeswalker. It would be super sick to counter an Aetherworks Marvel, like where they're like, okay, now I'm gonna drain all my Aetherworks and try and cast this Evercall, and you're like,
yeah, well, nope. You're like, I spend 6 energy, you're like, nope.
It's definitely going to be like something where they put a lot of work into it, a lot of resources.
Yes,
and
that's where,
like,
it is. That's why the Planeswalker is good, right? Because it's like,
yeah,
4 turns usually, right?
Brutal.
You're like, oh, I do all this work, spend these 4 turns, and you're like,
I'm thinking like a Nahiri or something where you're getting like marginal value out of it, but you're like, you're just trying to keep it protected so you can get to that ultimate. Yep. And it's like, oh, damn it. I just spent four mana to loot a couple times.
Get it to 8, and you're like, sacrifice it. And you're like, yes! No.
Even then, though, you've like traded a card for, I guess, a card. I guess you've traded a card for a card,
and then, you know, and they've gotten some marginal, like, you know, kind of not loot, but
you guys are thinking about all this wrong. You don't play counter spells for card advantage. You play counter spells for the get-ems.
Oh, you know what the real get-em is going to be? Yeah.
Gotcha. No,
the real get-em is going to be like, when you're ahead in a deck that has this card in it and your opponent like plays a stupid 1-mana 1/2 that gets a clue and then he like tries to crack the clue and you're like,
nope.
Get out of here. And he's just like spent 3 mana on a 1/2 and he's like, oh.
Are there Evolving Wilds?
Yeah.
Evolving Wild comes into play.
Get rid of your...
The other one that's... So it's only this, or this. So that could see some worlds where, like, you allow the Emrakul to resolve, but not the triggered ability.
Or right. The other way around, you counter the... Well, that's what happens a lot of the times anyways.
That's what I'm saying. So you can, like, depending on which one... Again, you were saying sometimes you don't know which one will be better, but say you can just swarm around her. You don't really care if, like, she is there.
Or your opponent's emerge cards. Oh, boy, they, like, sacrificed a creature and everything. And
so good! They get their octopus, right? They play their octopus and
you
they're like...
You tap nothing.
And you get nothing.
That's actually really handy, too, because the octopus is often played on the upkeep after you've untapped to tap your lands down.
Yeah.
And you've got your lands Well, although that kind of sucks because you get to tap the three mana to counter the thing.
Yeah.
But still. Anyway, sorry, let Cole finish this thing. We got off track.
No. I love this discussion. And I'm just going to wrap it up with Pia's Revolution is definitely getting buried. I think this is a fun card. Punisher effects, I'm wary of. I just
love those cards, though.
I think I want them to be good.
Yeah,
and
Larry's going to crack this card.
I feel like we are reaching that tipping point where WotC has been trying to dial in what a meaningful Punisher card that could have standard playability would be. And eventually they're going to get it right. Eventually they are going to tweak it just enough.
They've gotten it right a couple times, like Browbeat.
Browbeat?
Browbeat was good.
You think so? Like, I'm trying to think of like Athros, which was like, oh man, this would be such an awesome Punisher mechanic, and then wasn't really good, or things like that. And I'm too leery now of these Punisher mechanics, and tribute and all that stuff. So that's why I'm going to stay
Browbeat
away from it.
Was red Browbeat's- in two. Browbeat was red in two. Any player may have Browbeat deal 5 damage to him or her. If no one does, target player draws 3 cards. That card was actually pretty decent.
I mean, like, unless your opponent's at 5 life, or, you know, barring certain situations.
What about the incendiary? The red thing? Nah, so, the red Gearhulk.
Oh.
Incendiary Gearhulk?
Right. What was it? It's Combustible Gearhulk.
Combustible.
When Combustible Gearhulk enters the battlefield, target opponent may have you draw 3 cards. If that player doesn't, put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard, then Combustible Gearhulk deals damage to that player equal to the total converted mana cost of those cards.
That's how I win the PPTQ. Like, you're like,
yeah.
Play
such
like
a dumb effect.
You're like, I draw 3 or I'm going to deal, I don't know, somewhere between
yeah, he's like,
4 and 8 damage to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, he's playing like the red-white aggro.
Yeah.
With all the 2 drops, remember that?
Oh,
and,
nice.
And it's like he's like at 10 or something, and I play that, and I'm like, what would you like? And he goes, I'll just take the damage, and you know, turn over a 3 and a 3 and a land. And you're like, good, sweet, take 6.
I'll just keep my 6/6 first strike here,
yes,
hanging exactly. out.
Yeah, I guess a 6 mana 6/6 first strike that deals 6 damage to your opponent when it comes into play is a fine card.
Right, or draws you 3 cards.
Or draws you 3.
Well, no one's ever going to let you draw the 3.
No, I mean, there were many times he had to let me draw 3
right.
because
yeah,
they were so low in
unless
life.
Unless they're, yeah.
I mean, I
if
would
you're
also
already winning and they don't have a choice.
Think, what was it? What's the Sin Prodder 2 they printed recently? Yeah, yeah. Wasn't the worst. I mean, that was like, again, a Punisher mechanic, but that guy wasn't terrible.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he was not great, but he wasn't the worst. Anyways.
I mean, I guess
he was at least,
I guess technically right is the best kind of
he
right.
He was at least 3 mana for a 3/2 menace on top of a crappy Punisher mechanic, whereas this is
great.
3 mana for just a Punisher mechanic.
Great.
That's my crack sack.
I mean, okay. Larry, I'll let you go.
I'm going to crack Disallow.
Ooh.
Ooh, listen to him.
That card just seems sweet. For all the reasons we've talked, and it's got really like all the shade and the flavor text too. And I'm going to put I'm going to sack the damn Punisher mechanic. I'm taking the Pia's Revolution. Even though it may not be better. I just, like I said, I love these cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably one of my like weaknesses, but at least I know it's a weakness and I don't usually like draft.
But you know, it's a weakness.
Yes, I know it's a weakness. And I'm going to bury the Consulate Crackdown.
Really?
Even though I love the flavor text.
Okay.
Oh, man.
That's surprising. That was very character-driven.
Yes,
I know.
It was not as rational as I was expecting.
Where'd the logic go?
Larry, do your job.
You have one job on this team, damn it.
Be the smart one.
Well, the
Larry
spells.
Just loves the Punisher mechanics. I think I'm going to crack Disallow, too.
Ah, yeah. Woo!
Wow.
I don't know.
You're not going to take the Dirtly White card, Evan?
I know. It's tough. The
Dirtly value-driven fair White card.
Well, okay. So here's my reasoning. Disallow is the only card that does anything out of the 3 of these.
Yes. Just on a base level,
yeah.
Like this will always do something for
yeah.
you.
If I take the Marshall Sutcliffe approach... No, I mean, honestly, Consulate Crackdown is probably a pretty good card in the main deck of a draft deck. I think there's enough artifacts out there that you can, like, if you get, you know, a couple servo tokens plus a random artifact for 5 mana, I think that's, like, a fine enough trade.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can also lead to just insane blowouts. And I can imagine a standard environment where it wants to be main decked just because Smuggler's Copters and, like, Heart of Kirin's are just in every deck.
63% of all decks have Smuggler's Copter.
There you go. Yep. So it's only a dead card in 37% of all games you play.
Well, not necessarily. There could be other artifacts then, right?
That's true. So you could get a couple clues.
So here's
great.
The funny thing is the deck that doesn't play it
actually
deck that doesn't play Smuggler's Copter is the Ithra's Workmark, which is all artifacts.
Right.
Well, I guess it's dead against like the Jeskai control decks.
They do have Torrential Gearhulk.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not dead, but like,
that's a losing battle.
I think if my plan against that deck is a 5 mana enchantment, I would rather be dead.
Although, in a sense, I mean, honestly, if there's just an easy answer for Copter, that's almost worth it for a lot of control decks. Just because they have such trouble dealing with that card.
Five mana is not an easy
answer. Not an easy answer, but it'll always do it.
How much damage are you going to take from that thing before you get this down? Like 9?
This thing should be like rest in peace, where like it just every artifact that comes in just keeps getting exiled.
Nah, that would be sick. I mean, that would just shut down decks.
The reason the Jeskai control decks can compete against Smuggler's Copter is because of Harness Lightning.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, you know, they have an answer. And then, you know, of course the white instant out of the sideboard that destroys a artifact.
Fragmentize,
yeah.
Boom.
But Disallow has cooler art.
Yeah, and you know what's really
also
cool
just
about it?
More fun to think about the things that you can do with it.
The really cool thing about the thing is he's totally giving like the if you watch like any anime or like cartoons or everything, how they always give like the total backhanded like slap or like you know
right.
where they're just completely dismissive. So he's like this. Yeah, you guys can see it, but he's just giving you the old. Whoosh, like I'm done with you.
this is the flourish of the sword when you draw it and it like leaves the lines in the air.
So in Kaladesh they have these like arm swords, and so this guy Baral was the executioner. He was the police chief basically who hunted down Mima and Peepop and Chandra, and killed Chandra's father, and then now has become this consulate.
Is he the one that was in the original ring?
Planeswalker story.
Was he the one that was in the original ring when she planeswalks away?
Yes.
When she
he's
killing her.
So he's trying to kill her.
And that's why he's wearing that little mask, because he's probably fucking all burned up.
Yes, because his face is so I don't know if you looked in the earlier set. What's the rare? He's got a rare. Insidious Will is his face. And you can see he's taking his mask off and has his face is all melty.
Sweet.
He's got a little
crayon now.
Little sun in the crayon.
This is like a 4D experience.
Anyways, just some more for y'all.
Oh yeah,
just some force those, because somebody's got to do their job, Larry.
Glad I don't do shit.
Hey, at least I did say I like the art where he's giving you the backhanded dismissal. Like I'm done with you.
get your fire out of here.
So I'm gonna crack him. I mean, like having a. Are those Jeskai decks main decking Summary Dismissal right now?
So I watched
like one or two. I feel like
so I watched O'Neill
mm-hmm.
or Neil.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Neil Oliver.
Neil Oliver from for Channel Fireball. He's playing black green Aetherworks.
Yeah.
So he plays this guy, and he's like, okay, he's playing red white control, and he's got like. A very, very mediocre hand. He's got like 3 Marvels in his hand,
mm-hmm.
and he's got like 3 land. And he's like, well, I guess, if you're going to play an Aetherworks Marvel and you got 3 of these in your hand, you've got to play them, right?
Yeah.
So he plays it and he's going along, and then he goes, turn 4, he's like, turn 3, he plays like a tracker and it gets countered somehow. He's like, okay, well, at least that means that, like, you know, one of these Marvels will succeed. So he plays the first Marvel and he's like, negate. He's like, wow, main negate, that's really brutal. He goes, okay, well, at least like one. He goes, next one. He goes, negate. And he goes, okay. And then the next turn, he finally plays the last one. The guy's like, confirm suspicions.
Jeez.
Right? And he's like, well, how many counter spells does this guy have? And then they're going along and going along. And he goes, well, at least, like, you know, I've got, like, Emrakul, right? And then he plays Emrakul. And the guy does the whatever the
summary dismissal.
Summary dismissal. Jeez. So, and through this whole game, he ends up playing the fourth negate. And he goes, wow, we were never gonna win this.
Yeah, it's pre-sideboarded.
Yeah, it's like, and he's like, he goes, you know, I guess like moving on, looking with like so many copters and so many things, he's like, negate seems pretty sweet.
Negate's good.
Yeah,
I'd buy it.
And summary just or disallow is a great way to have a summary dismissal type of effect that doesn't cost four mana that you can have in the main deck. And yeah, I'll sack the Consulate Crackdown.
No crack.
It's a good card. What did I want to say about this?
Terrible it's, art.
It's so weird. It definitely, like, you think it's a Wrath, but it's a crazy Oblivion Ring.
Yeah, it is. That's what it is.
But I mean, it's definitely a good card. And the, finally, I mean, you say you want a revolution, but we'd all love to see the plan. And if that plan involves Pia's revolution, then, like, seriously, get your shit together, dude. Not a good plan.
Well, I mean, maybe Chandra's like giving her votes or something.
But does Chandra take money from people with minds who hate?
Yes.
Well, then I gotta tell you, brother, you gotta wait.
Wow. Deep cut there. Yeah.
Is it? How deep is that? 1970 how or something? Deep? I don't
Before
know.
You were born.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyways. Yeah. Good crack like a berry. And please, listeners at home, feel free to hit us up on Facebook or tweet at Evan or whatnot. I mean, we love getting these.
Follow our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook.com/WizardsOfTheCast.
Yeah,
we
you
need
know.
Better themes, though.
I believe it's choose your cards and tell us your theme.
Yeah, I would not be doing my duty if I didn't also just throw shade at anybody who comes within my line of sight. So, you know, it's part of the Evan Wardell package.
Oh, yes. Anyways, real quick before we wrap up, I wanted to go over an interesting topic that has come up. There's been some questions about the health of the current standard environment. We're kind of in the sunset phase of Kaladesh standard as we know it before the revolution comes around through the holidays, and we're also at the end of the year. And it's always fun at this time of the year to kind of go back over the year that was. And we're going to do a little bit of a year in review, but we're going to be looking at it through the top 10 cards. Standard cards played in 2016. Now, there's a fantastic video we should also probably link in our description that the Manasaurus does, and if you're not subscribed to him on YouTube, get your shit together, where he goes over mathematically the most played cards in the top 64 of tournament play over the past year, and it's really fun. And the first three cards are...
Well, actually, as a really sort of a good sort of... place setter or something for this the guy who gives this crack second berry also asked us what our opinion on Sam Stoddard put out a question on Twitter on a scale from 1 to 10, what do you think of the current standard environment?
This is a Twitter poll that Sam did.
Yeah, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst.
And so this was Sam Stoddard that did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then a bunch of pros commented on it. I was actually looking through it too, Evan, and a lot of threes.
Out of 10?
Yes.
Really?
10 being good.
10 being the best and 1 being the worst. A lot of 3 to 5s.
I would like to see how those ratings correlate to like finishes and yes. pro level, high level events.
If they're not just wrecking it, they're like, it's terrible.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you look at some of the pros that were talking about it, and it's like, yes, it's very cool that standard has combo decks that exist in it, but those games can feel predictable, which is like a fair critique of what the problem with combo decks is, that games always kind of play out in similar ways, at least your end game scenario, and copter being oppressive. A lot of like
copter slightly oppressive. Gotta talk to Michael.
A lot of copters being slightly impressive.
I don't think it's copter so much. I mean, it's the type of card that you have to have an answer to, or like right. a way to.
The other thing is, I feel like these polls are sometimes misleading because, except for a few rare occasions where we have had truly anemic standard deck lists, where one or two decks. I'm thinking of Theros Block. When we were in there, it was like literally three decks. Sorry, well, red green was like
no. Mono blue,
yeah.
Mono black, blue white control.
Oh right, sorry, blue white control.
You do not don't you remember like
I remember blue white control? I remember.
Don't you
mostly,
remember tap 10 land, gain 7 life?
Yeah, yeah.
Draw 7 cards. Did we not forget it?
Don't you remember Elixir of Immortality as a win condition?
Right. but I feel like they've done a pretty good job of making sure the standard is more diverse since then. I think that it's been exciting to watch the standard season. There has been definitely a lot of aggressive decks that have, you know, taken these tournaments down. And maybe Bant Coco was kind of I don't know. It's tough to say if this standard environment is not good. I don't feel qualified to judge that. And I feel like the pros always have a recency bias where the current standard environment is always not as good as the past one because the past one was solved and this one is, I don't know if that's valid or not, but
I don't know. I mean, it's
easy to hate on the things that are new is my point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not really new enough anymore for that to be an right. issue so much. I think a healthy standard environment is one that's like, you know, as diverse as it can be. And also, you know, having when you're in a situation where the top decks can rotate based on how the format's doing, instead of just like one or three decks that are kind of at the top and like some sideboard cards change a little bit now and again to like shut down the sort of like second tier decks that try to rise up a little bit. That's kind of how I feel where standard is right now, at least from like a spectator's position. It seems like there's maybe like three or four decks at the very top, you know, probably like blue white, I guess three would be like blue white flash, green black, and Aetherworks Marvel are like probably the top three decks. Maybe Jeskai Control's in there.
So you got blue white control
or blue white mid range flash,
yeah,
whatever.
Blue white flash, and then you got Aetherworks and what,
green black
and vehicles.
And red, white vehicles.
Something vehicles.
I guess we got vehicles. And then there's also like the Jeskai Control deck that's sort of like tier 1.5. So I guess it's okay. I mean, I think from an outsider's perspective, it's sort of like 4.5 to 5. Maybe like 5. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
1 point for each of the top tier standard decks, I guess.
I mean, it doesn't feel as... I don't know. It doesn't feel as bad as I think everybody thinks it is. I mean, if you look back, like let's take a look at this last year in review and see.
Yeah.
Because I think this will touch upon some decks that I think were way more impressive than what the current metagame decks are like. So we have
Rally the Ancestors.
We've got to get down the list. We'll get through this quickly, but I just want to mention.
I was looking and like trying to find this. So Kai Buddha, who we should like probably expect is like, you know, a reasonable voice.
Yeah.
How so? Says,
well, because he's just the best player ever.
I don't get it.
Okay. So anyhow, he says, Copter is stupid. Emrakul is stupid. Prevents format from being diverse. Will never get more than a 3 from me.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, a lot of 3s. Sam Black also put it at a 3.
I'd like to really quickly, that response, this is stupid. That's stupid. It sucks.
Stupid.
That's basically what he said.
Stupid.
It's Twitter, okay? You only have so many characters to work with. All right. Anyways, honorable mentions, speaking of Emrakul, honorable mentions for top 10 cards. These do not make the list, but they were close. Liliana of The Last Hope probably just doesn't have the time yet to make the statistical averages that put it in the top 10, put her in the top 10. Emrakul, I think, is unfair because...
these are honorable mentions.
These are honorable mentions to the top 10. So these are three cards that aren't in the top 10, but did have high showings, and I feel like are emblematic of standard over the past year. Emrakul, definitely. Not going to be probably a card that's going to show up enough in the top 8s and top 64s just because you don't play four copies of them in your deck. Or do you in those? Maybe
You don't, but that's still a
statistical disadvantage to the card.
Yes, and the card warps the format it so does. Much, so you can't. I mean, that card definitely is top 10.
I think it's fair to make the argument that should be in top 10 for how it affects the format.
Yeah.
This is all done by individual card count. Also, Baby
is
Jace.
Is it like total cards?
Total number of copies so like in the top 64 on average or whatever, things like that. He does the math average.
Top 16 he did.
Sorry, oh, top 16.
Top 16.
Right.
So
for events in the past year.
Which is absolutely a fine metric and it's a great place to start. You just need to say, well, you know, if you have like a 13 drop, you can only have so many of those deck, and then you just have ways to look for it and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, just not having Emrakul is just suspect.
I think you can make it. Also, the last one on the honorable mentions, Baby Flip Jace. At one point was an $80 card in standard.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Or more.
Okay, but starting off with the top 10. Drum roll, please. Why do we have you on this show?
That was a drum roll. What are you talking about?
All right. Sylvan Advocate, number 10. Welcome to Fair.
Wait, that's like the bottom of the list?
That's the bottom of the list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Sylvan Advocate.
Better be some all-stars in here.
I believe I called it when it came out. I was like, watch out, guys. This guy feels very, very Tarmogoyf-y and totally ended up being one of those powerhouse two drops that Green sometimes gets. Larry, your thoughts? It's a green guy. You don't care.
No, I mean, I think that the card just definitely belongs in the top 10 just for the fact that it was everywhere and it was impressive.
Right.
Like, and it also, like, it got big with all the man lands it was doing.
I don't know about impressive.
Featured player, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was in, like, every kind of deck, though.
I think impressive means a very specific thing when you're talking about.
So like,
this was maybe supportive
of
a lot of decks.
Copter oppressive?
No.
I would also argue that Copter is supportive of a lot of deck types. It's the engine that runs a lot of deck types. And
I think the thing you're touching on is these cards will be oppressive for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Like they show up and when they first start getting real good, they like are the format for a minute. And like, in the long run, they don't end up being oppressive because the format kind of warps around them. But there's, like, that moment in time, like, maybe, like, a 2 or 3 week cycle where it really does feel like those cards are the format.
Right. It revolves around those pieces.
Yeah.
Sylvan Advocate, maybe not one of those guys, but definitely an all-star from the set he was in.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
At number 9, Selfless Spirit.
Really?
Yeah.
Higher than, I guess these are just numbers.
I mean, think about the number 4 ofs that, I mean, Sylvan Advocate always shows up with 3 other Sylvan Advocates. Selfless Spirit always shows up with 3 other Selfless Spirits.
But Sylvan Advocate's been around for longer.
Selfless Spirit, though,
is like
perfect
Blue White's
for the
doing
Coco
that much better.
No, but think about it in Coco.
It was in the Coco deck, too.
Right? Think
was
about
it?
How yes. good it was. Yes. The moment it hit the table, it was in those Coco decks. Right away.
Not even all the time. It wasn't even in like Bant Coco all the time.
I felt like at least a 2 of.
So the initial Bant, no, but as soon as Selfless Spirit came out, it went into the deck.
No.
Yes.
It was like there for a minute. I feel like it was there for a minute in the beginning. And then it was sort of like in and out. It was like, maybe it's good enough, maybe it's not. And then Coco was just who can like rally the ancestors the best. And then it just wasn't there at all.
Well, no, there was Rally the Ancestors, which had Coco. And then there was Coco, which was just Bant, like the one I played.
Well, if we don't want to talk about oppressive cards, I mean, Coco is...
We're getting there.
Right. Okay, next on the list. Number 8, Ishkna, Graf Widow.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was the only way to deal with aggressive
this
decks.
This is going to be this whole segment for me. Really?
No. For like one day, it was an important card.
Wait,
no, Evan. It was
we're talking about the 5-mana, 3/5 legendary
that
creature.
Makes
that's like a
bunch of 1/2s that can block flying creatures.
I get it's a good card, but like it's just surprising to me that it put up such numbers. I mean, who plays more than 2 or 3 in a deck?
but every green deck had to play it.
Yeah, but so does every... I mean, like, that seems way more true about Sylvan Advocate than...
right.
Ishkanatomy.
I can get that.
I mean, I think that's a reasonable thing.
In top 16s, it's also that these decks have had better finishes, too. Right? We're not, like, overall, we're looking at the decks that hit these top 16s. So the better decks were played Ishkanat. Why? Because Ishkanat is a good card.
You can put Sylvan Advocate in any green deck. You can only put Ishkanat in a Delirium deck.
And Delirium became a big part of the format over the summer.
It's crazy. All right, keep going.
Seven, Spellqueller. Spellqueefer.
To the surprise of no
one. No one. I mean, this card. I mean, do we even have to really, like... I mean,
nope.
Wait, what does it do?
Once you
never
read,
mind.
Right, no, once you read this card, you're like, wait, what? And then what? No. Down the list is for the same mana cost, Reflector Mage, because Yay! You need
a blue
both
white, a blue white one and a blue white one and Yay! A 2/3 and a 2/3
and you want to play Magic? No. You don't get to play Magic. yeah. This one obviously is more based purely on
which one of these cards is better.
Spellqueller.
All right, I guess it is rare.
Yeah, flying.
Though, to be fair, I think Reflector Mage should have been rare.
True.
Reflector, yeah, no, that's definitely true. Reflector Mage, better with Coco, I think.
Yes, no question better.
At number five, Rally the Ancestors. Blech. Do you remember Rally? Do we all remember Rally? God, how oppressive was Rally for like...
A very long time.
For like four weeks.
Months.
Well, wait, 4 months you think that it was that bad?
So Coco's going to be like at one, right? Because that card would not matter if Coco didn't exist.
Yes.
I don't know. Didn't Rally exist alongside?
You can't
alongside?
Rally without Coco.
You can? With Jace?
Not really. Yeah. I mean, it was the combination of the thing. But, yeah, I mean, you could rally without it. But, like, I mean, Coco made that deck way better, too.
Yeah. People were rallying at first.
Okay, so just wait, till we,
Coco,
wait till we get to the point when we talk about Coco that had four or five of these cards that are in the top ten.
No, I know.
It was very cool that there was a crazy combo, like, mini Cold Snap when we had Rally Ancestors floating
combo
around. It was a fun little combo. Then at number four, Smuggler's Copter. And
wow.
I believe this card's been out for 4 months. And it is the number four most played card in Standard over
Jeez.
The entire year. It had 300 copies when looking at the sample size of T16 finishes.
Every day I'm
the
smuggling.
Most. I mean, one of the, well, not the most, but one of the most.
Yeah. There was, 32 copies in the first GP or whatever it was, right?
I also want to note, I called this. Remember when we did our Fave 5?
Wait, Cole, you figured out that the 2-mana 3/3 flyer is going to be good?
That loots on both attacking and blocking. Maybe a little busted. Sorry. I'm going to toot my hood where I can.
So this is where he tells us that a $20 bill is better than a $10 bill because...
I don't buy it.
I am... yeah. Anyways. Number three... She's big, she's bad, she's got flash, she's Avison.
Wow. All
right.
Avison. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, this card showed up immediately.
Do not feel like this card is as oppressive as
it
some of the other stuff.
Remarkably fair compared to some of the things we put on this list.
I mean, she's broken and she does great things, but she doesn't feel as...
She feels mythic. She feels five mana mythic.
She does, but I mean, some of the other things I felt more... oppressed by, if that makes sense. Because
she didn't build an entire oppressive deck around her. She was just a role player in helping decks get from 1.5 to 1.
I don't know. Would the current blue-white deck be as good as it is without Avison?
No,
but it also...
I feel like it also pushes out a lot of sort of like mid-rangey creature strategies in a lot of
ways.
That's
true. Just to have a 4/4 flash.
Like what's your mid-rangey creature-based strategy that's going to beat the... 4/4 flying flash that makes your creatures indestructible and is a wrath on a stick. Like you have to play that card if you're going to play that kind of strategy.
Right.
You know, it's like,
or you want to beat those mid range strategies. Yeah, I get that. Right. It's funny because I think you're exactly right, Evan. You've noticed that the meta has now gone under Avacyn with faster decks or over Avacyn with Emrakul.
Yeah. Or, you know,
otherwise you're playing Avacyn mid range.
Yeah. Or the counterspell decks. I mean, like it's a good thing that it dies to the, you know, the most common black removal spell, which is handy regardless of which way you cut its, you know, indestructible thing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the format does have an answer. Maybe that's also why it doesn't feel bad.
It's made green creature decks a lot worse, I think,
yes.
Specifically because of how that indestructibility thing
right.
really screws up. You can't. It's probably
block.
I mean, it's a big reason.
It's probably a big reason why Sylvan Advocate isn't as good as it was before.
Right. Right.
That there's like a good deck around Avacyn, because like you're even once a four, once it's a 4/5. It's maybe a little easier, but even then, they could just like block with all the creatures and make them indestructible.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Also, they just can start whacking. Like Avacyn's clock, I think is like surprisingly fast in the way that shows up at end of turn, starts attacking you immediately for four, has vigilance, has flying,
or six.
Yeah.
Or end of turn create a situation where they just wrath you on your upkeep and attack you for six or something.
Yeah.
And does three to you.
Yeah, it's like. End of your turn. Wrath your board on tap with a six. Take nine. Yeah.
Attack you with my 9/5 flyer.
That's crazy.
Okay. The boogeyman, Coco, number two.
Jeez, what beat Coco? Holy shit. God.
I mean, this card.
I don't even care about this anymore. I just want to know what beat it.
I mean, what's crazy about Coco is let's just point out, as Larry's pointing out, what are the cards that went into Coco's deck that are also in the top 10. Okay. Rally the Ancestors was played with Collected Company at 5.
Well, I don't know. Just go with the Bant one.
Reflector
everything that's
Mage.
Three or less.
Spell Queller. I'm going to call it Spell Queef. Selfless Spirit, Sylvan Advocate. That's four of the
plus
the six creatures ABGs that are in this top 10.
Ooh, Gideon won, didn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Nailed it.
But I actually don't think Gideon is as much a problem as Collector Company was.
It's
That's a good argument.
Argument. There's just no way.
Because Collector Company, do you think that the Bant Collector, I mean, the problem is Gideon also went into these Bant Collector Company decks too.
He didn't
show up at like one or two of them.
Nope.
No. All right.
You needed
creatures. Yeah, there might have been some in the two in the sideboard. But like not only was it in the Bant, the Collected Company, but it was also in the Rally of the Ancestors.
Right. And it fueled basically two dominant decks and these decks were dominant for not just like a flash in the pan. They were dominant for a huge swath of the seasons.
Yeah, I think the difference is Coco is a card that enabled strategies that were just offensive to have to deal with all the time.
Gideon was just a hard card to deal with on its own and wasn't like...
Gideon, I think, is a
perfect...
It has
the Avacyn thing.
Yeah, and I think it's actually a perfect... Gideon the card is a perfect analogy for what Standard is like these days.
Yes.
It's this card that will very much win the game on its own if it's left unchecked, but it's not particularly unfair on the face value, and there's ways to fight against it, but you have to be doing things every turn to like try to deal with it. And if you don't, it'll take over and destroy you.
You fall down right real quick.
Yeah, and it's not like, it doesn't seem like an insane card on its face. It just seems like a cool value card.
It doesn't build a deck around itself. It's a great role player.
And that's probably why it was so ubiquitous, because you can put it in any deck except for the Coco decks, I guess.
Right. I mean, most white decks played copy. And the thing about Gideon is because of the emblematic effect of him, it was like great to have multiples almost in your hand and great to have multiples of him.
That was the coolest thing about that guy.
Yeah.
The deck design. Like, still that's why I like the Heart of Kieran, that you can activate, you can crew it by activating Planeswalkers. Like, it feels like to me there's so much design space to do interesting things. Like remember like a couple of things ago I said.
Instant.
You have an instant on. Like it just feels there's so many cool things, and the idea of like that Gideon just sacrifices himself and your whole team, and you just get that one time, and then there's a zero and a plus one. Like the whole idea of him, the design of him was super cool.
Yeah, I think it's a great Gideon design. I mean, it is. When I read this list, I was trying to think about other 4-mana white cards that will be as iconic as this Gideon will be. And I'm like, maybe Wrath of God, but outside of that, this is like the thing. Like, I was just trying to think about like
Hero of Bladehold
in cubes. Oh. What'll be the thing that occupies that 4-mana slot?
Hero
from
Bladehold.
Armageddon.
Linvala. This is a bunch. That's the one problem I have drafting all these white decks on cube, is so many good 4-drop cards.
Yes. And Gideon was definitely pushed. And
there's like a million Gideons that cost 4 mana too.
Yeah.
This is definitely
there's
best
a bunch
one.
Of them 5 too.
Yeah. And it's there's true. 6 mana Gideon when he showed up in Zendikar originally.
So you guys know who Jeff Hoogland is, right?
Yes.
So in response to the poll,
yeah.
So he has a really great thing. He goes, Jeff Hoagland, Sam Stoddard, the games where Emrakul doesn't show up are a solid 7. The ones where she does are 3 at best.
Yeah.
It's like
Emrakul is.
That's why, like, and you look at every single person's like either Copter or Emrakul, like define it. So how Emrakul's not in the top 10 just because of like some statistics. It doesn't.
Well, that's just the current standard. I mean, half of this year was before Emrakul existed. No,
the reason it doesn't show up is because he's going by just raw numbers. And the reason
it might not show up next year, even though it will have probably made an impact then or something.
Right,
because
it's just because the numbers people are not playing 4, right? So if you're not playing 4, then you just can't compete with something that every time you have 4 Advocate and you have 4 Reflector Mage and
it's definitely a different discussion than, you know, like maybe that the 5 highlight cards of the
of the
format. But also at the same time, I mean, like, you know, the fact that you don't play as many in a deck means you just don't see it as often.
Yeah, but that's not true
in matches,
because that's why we have the combo deck.
Wait, so are you saying you see Emrakul just as often as you see Reflector Mage cast?
No, but I'm saying is that it's still a top 10 card of the year.
It's a huge part of a bunch of decks. Right, that's definitely true.
And it's so impactful that it changes the way that you have to build your deck even before you go into the tournament. As such, I believe it's a top 10 card.
I mean,
I certainly would put that card over like Selfless Spirit.
Yeah, or Sylvan Advocate. I mean, you could make that argument. I mean, Sylvan Advocate maybe really has been a cornerstone, but definitely Selfless Spirit.
Definitely Selfless Spirit.
Definitely.
Although Selfless Spirit is a little bit of an anomaly to me.
Yeah.
But even Ishkana. Maybe like Ishkana is kind of like the stand-in for Emrakul. You know, like they're in all the same decks together or whatever.
Yeah. They're just playing like the third copy of Ishkana versus the second or one copy.
Are all those decks playing 4 Ishkanas? Or are they playing
I have no
three?
Idea.
No, they're mostly playing 3 still.
Yeah.
But anyways, but it's an interesting list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the Emrakul is like, I don't think it, if you're like a mid-rangey or control-y deck, it definitely changes the way you have to build your deck. But if you're, I don't know, if you're a slightly aggressive deck,
it doesn't work. I definitely think Emrakul is,
I mean, the only difference, like, think of like the blue-white deck.
Right.
Right. Like, the only thing that changes is like, oh, we'll throw a couple of summary dismissals in the, summary dismissals in the sideboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that card would never be there otherwise.
Yeah, but that's true about all sorts of cards. You know, like the
Fragmentize and
it's like a card that has an answer to it, and it doesn't like change the way the blue white deck is built fundamentally.
But there was for a little while like black green was just everywhere, right? And that, I mean, that was because people felt it was the best deck because of Emrakul. I mean, that was the whole point.
Honestly, that Pro Tour, that, you know, Pro Tour Eldritch Moon was like super cool the first time the Emrakul got cast, and then you're like, oh, wait, it takes like 10 minutes for them to take their opponent's turn. And you're like, he's like, I think Emrakul maybe feels oppressive too, just because it's like not an easy card to play.
Especially
or play round or play against. Well,
and again, at the Pro Tour, right, they're like, you know, jockeying things around to like, you know, play enough time, and they're playing 60-minute rounds. Yeah. And like Grand Prix, that shit don't happen. And you get this person who's fucking playing this black-green deck, right? And they're like, all right.
Like, it's not my graveyard.
Right. They just like, that's how they start the turn. They're like, all right. And they like lean back in their chair and they like fold their hands and you're like, oh, fuck. It's going to be like 10 minutes for you. Like, here, let me just fucking
scoop. Can I just go to the bathroom and you deal with this?
First, let me count the permanent types of my graveyard. Then, you know, untap. Yeah, then exactly. Draw a card.
That's the other thing. It's like you.
Then during upkeep.
I mean, I'm playing like a super aggressive deck and I can't beat like the Marvel deck because, like, again, the one time it was a super anomaly, but again, you know, it's like, all right, the thing comes into play. He gains 3 life, so we both have to write it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And heaven then forbid you write a changing life total.
No, but I mean, but the thing is that like every single time that happens, it takes like some amount of time, right?
Oh yeah.
And then like every time
that's
he
me
casts
in modern with the
every time
lands.
He casts a card, he's got to look to see whether it goes into the pile that has all the, you know, individual different types, or does it go into the other pile?
Mm-hmm.
And he's constantly counting them. And yeah, do you remember when like last season format with like standard, like with all the fetch lands? It's fucking insane. Right?
Oh yeah.
And it feels a little like that. There's just so many mechanics and so many like little gears and like everything, switches and levers. And
I think the thing that really sets it apart and makes it seem like a weird, crazy anomaly is that, like, if you're like a Golgari mage, then your life must revolve around Emrakul. Like, you casting it, dealing with it from your opponents, it's like the best thing you can do and the best thing anybody can do against you.
Right.
And also the thing that it makes you have to deal with is just so hard to deal with and so weird to deal with. You just don't have a lot of like ways to deal with it or interact with it.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's all that matters. Whereas every other matchup when you're playing green black is just kind of like a, like typical of a type of matchup attrition you would play. Game.
It plays most like when when Emrakul doesn't show up, it's like super grindy, right?
The games are just more like the type of deck you would the type of games that you would expect to play with that deck. Right. But then Emrakul comes down and just kind of like changes all that, throws it out the window. So I think like if you're like a green black mage, like Emrakul is like your dad. He's like, he's waiting upstairs, and if he gets mad and comes downstairs, it's like a whole thing you got to deal with.
Hope you don't hear the belt coming
again,
up.
Guys. Christmas episode. Okay, we've got like the trifecta of like getting beaten by your father, staring at the abyss of the internet.
Don't piss off your dad. Emrakul is gonna have a problem.
Emrakul, he doesn't like instance.
Yeah, but the point I was trying to make is like if you're not in that sort of like milieu of grindy control-y decks, like Emrakul is not even like. It's like it's the control deck's finisher, whatever, I don't care.
Anyways.
Of course, their finisher kills me. That's what finishers are for.
Finish him.
Anyways, this episode, I believe, is finished, actually.
Boom.
Yeah, that segue is actually the Emrakul of this podcast in a lot of ways.
Anyways, yes, so if you want to email us and tell us how you rate Standard from 1 to 10, that would be really fun. You can do it on the Facebook page. Have we plugged that enough
yet? You can't email us on the Facebook page, but you can email us at our email address. It's wizardsofthecast@gmail.com.
Awesome. And
if you want to comment on the Facebook page and like the Facebook page, it's facebook.com/wizardsofthecast.
We'll make sure we get Larry's post up there, too, for his draft.
Yes, I'll post that there.
The social network, the movie, would have some issues with you calling it the Facebook.
The Facebook.
Yeah, well, Mark Zuckerberg knows where to put the money. Give me the money. I want the money.
I'll put the link to that draft video on the Facebook page. I'll also put it in the show notes too, so you can check below.
Sick. You can also tweet at us, right?
Yeah, tweet at us. I'm at Evan Wardell. No, I'm not. I'm at Nobody RLY. Jesus Christ.
I'm at Chat Fiend.
And I am at K Cole F.
Wow, you guys just blown.
Our Twitter avatars are taking over our real lives. Ah.
Okay, I'm not
right. Anyways,
I feel like there's another thing.
No,
we did all the things.
Oh, great. Well,
we'll see you next week.
Next week. What's next week? Oh man, next week it's gonna be the first day of my vacation. I am so excited.
Cool.
And we will have passed Rogue One.
Oh, I gotta go see that. I gotta get my tickets. I'm excited.
Y'all want to go see some?
You want to go see some?
Yep.
Rogue One-ness.
All right.
A Star Wars story.
Well, for this magic story,
for supposedly.
For Wizards of the Cast, my name's Evan Wardell.
I'm Larry Chatfield.
And I'm Cole Ferriola.
Thank you for listening.
Boom.